Ground Zero. My poetry reading at the Orange Bear on Murray Street in Tribeca had to be postponed from October to January because Ground Zero was still toxic and inaccessible. But even 4 months after the disaster, when I went up for the rescheduled reading, I could still smell the smoke in the financial district, like a fireplace that had gone cold but still reeked of ash. I'd taken the train up from Wilmington and met my friend Roger at Penn Station. Roger lived in Westchester, but worked in an office on 53rd Street. The walls of the train station were still plastered with photographs of the missing the desperate people had put up, still holding out hope. Or maybe by that time they'd lost hope. It was a gloomy January day, gray sky, a light snow falling. I was in my office on the 30th floor, my window facing south, but I just couldn't look, Roger said, pretty much the first thing out of his mouth once we'd greeted each other. I remembered the footage of people running for their lives after the South Tower collapsed, pursued by the rolling cloud of smoke and debris boiling up behind them, terrified, racing toward the clear blue in front of them, the day so otherwise calm and clear. I remembered, too, the images of people leaping from windows in the inferno to their certain death. Who doesn't know somebody in New York? My sister-in-law did some sort of freelance work in the financial district, but she'd been home that day in her Upper West Side apartment. People in Wilmington all had stories, like the guy whose aunt and uncle had an office in the complex. He'd called and called to try to reach them without success, in a panic, only to learn they hadn't made it out of Brooklyn that day. They'd stayed behind to vote in the mayoral primary. Another guy had a sister who worked for Cantor Fitzgerald, but she hadn't been among the hundreds of employees who'd died away from the office that day. The Orange Bear was a seedy old man bar just blocks away from where the towers had stood. It might have been an old-time speakeasy. Above the bar, lined with half-empty bottles of whiskey, gin, vodka, scotch, rum, a painting of a reclining odalisque haloed in dimwatt bulbs emphasized the saloon atmosphere of the place. I half expected to see Miss Kitty come flouncing by in a B-girl frock, as if she were at the Long Branch in Dodge City. My friend, Tom Catterson, who published a poetry journal called Medicinal Purposes with his friend Robert Dunn, hosted the reading series called Poet to Poet. He'd invited me to read in his series one lazy summer day back in July when I was up in New York for another reading. Tom had lost part of a leg from the knee down to diabetes, and he'd walked around with a crutch. He'd made me think of a pirate. Since I was a featured reader, they waived the $3 cover, but Roger had to pay, and I bought him a drink. There was an elevated stage on one side of the room, big enough to accommodate a 5-man band. This was where the readings would take place. 3 of us were reading, followed by an open mic. Tom hoisted himself to the stage on his peg leg and crutch. "We're New Yorkers," he declared, to get the reading underway. "We're not going to be cowed by no fucking terrorists." Of course, the disaster was still the first thing anybody thought about or talked about. Tom's declaration was greeted by scattered, half-hearted applause, and then Tom introduced the readers. What did I choose to read? Fred Goes to College. My college roommate Fred slept in a hammock he'd strung up between window and closet. After Vietnam, he said he felt more comfortable swinging, suspended in a mesh rope bed. In the cafeteria, he ate like a cat hunkered over its dish, aware of his surroundings through peripheral vision, ready to run if some unexpected danger appeared. I always imagined that life for Fred was like waking up in the middle of a fire drill, a shrill, constant ringing and chaos in the halls, a sharp, unfamiliar breeze from an open window at the end of the corridor, distant shouting in an echoing stairwell, college kids clutching bathrobes around them, people bumping blindly into one another as they tried to be orderly in a manner mimicking 1,000 different concepts of order, and that clanging bell there at the end of the fluorescent lit hallway announcing disaster like an old-time archangel out of some thundering evangelist sermon. If you could only shut the damn thing up, if you could only bring on the silence. So this was Ground Zero, I thought, sipping my whiskey and half listening to the red-haired girl who followed me, glad to be done. It felt historic even then, only 4 months after the towers had fallen. A few years later, Tom would die from a heart attack. And several years after that, Roger would retire from his job and move to a co-op in Soho. And construction would begin on a new skyscraper where the towers had stood. but just for this January afternoon, it felt like I was in a war zone. I had just read my poetry at Ground Zero.